has a small bit of a needle there.
Come on, Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Listen, McQueen, and now they're really roaring. And I can tell you, there won't be a cold milk I'll declare for at least a week.
Hello, everyone. You're very welcome to the Irish Examiner Gaelic Football Show. My name is Paul Rouse, and I'm joined today by Oisín McConville, the former Armagh footballer, and by Joanne Cantwell, the former Dublin footballer and presenter of the Sunday Game. Joanne, we were talking here a few weeks ago. Oisín and Eamon Fitzmaurice were saying that they'd love to still be playing football, but they decided against pulling back on the boots. However, last year you came out of retirement to play club football. Why did you do that?
Well, I do believe that what Oisín said was that he wouldn't physically be capable of because he's half dead. But that doesn't really make a difference.
That's very true, actually. But he did say his skills were still different gravy if you make Oisín by the way.
Funny enough, I forgot about that part. My skills are not still different gravy, not that they ever were. Why did I come back? I'll tell you why I came back. I actually stopped playing properly when I was far too young, when I was kind of early to mid-20s, because work started to get crazy. But I should have continued to do it anyway. It's a stupid thing to do and a poor excuse. But what happened was I got into this phase where it felt like I never played, even though football had dominated, and I mean dominated, my life for absolute years. And then to suddenly have it be like that never really happened was very strange. I did briefly go back about 10 years for 1 year just before I started a family. I got roped into joining the local club. And then what happened was a couple of years ago, Paul Early gave me a call about something. And as a joke, he said, I'm training the girls again. If you're interested in coming training. And I said, really? Yeah. So I somehow found myself training with a load of young ones and having rings run around me. But God, it was like a new lease. It was one of the best things I've ever done. And it doesn't matter that I'm about 2.5 times the age of most of my teammates and most of my opponents. And especially last year, you feel like you're just getting a new lease of life or something. It's brilliant.
Are you going back this year?
I am. 11th of May.
Is this, you said, I read where you said last year, I made a big mistake and I stopped playing.
Yeah.
Is that what's behind this?
Possibly. There's a good chance that that's what's behind it. Yeah, because it definitely was. But I stopped playing when I was probably in my prime as well, which is really, really annoying because I'm certainly a long way past that. It's part that, and it's also part, sometimes you get to a certain age and you just stop doing things because you're a certain age and you feel you shouldn't do stuff. And actually, it turns out that that's not true. So I think part of it is that as well. I wanted to see that I still do things, still get out there and train and kick a football.
Physically, how do you feel after training or games?
I love it. Now, obviously, we were Junior B last year in Kildare. I'm obviously not training at the sort of level that you would have been with Cross McGlenn, so different to that.
No, but you still have to run around, you still have to tackle, and you still have to...
Well, to be honest, I keep myself pretty fit. I do a lot of running the last couple of years. So every week I do a good bit of running and a few bits of other pieces. So I'd be terrified if I were to stop that for any length of time, that I would never, ever be able to start again. And I'd certainly never get back into any condition. So I actually love the training sessions. And you know the way everybody was giving out about the Zoom sessions? We had Alva on our team was doing our HIIT on a Tuesday and our strength training on a Thursday over Zoom. Was one of the highlights of my week that Tuesday, the HIIT session. It was just brilliant. And we actually stopped last week and I was devastated. So, and that makes me sound like I'm one of these super fit people, which I absolutely am not, but I love doing it. So the body at the moment is fine, but you know, as you get older, when you were younger, it's the muscles that are hurting you after a session. But then when you get older, it's your bones. It makes you feel ancient.
How are you received by the girls who you're playing with, the women you were playing with, and those you're playing against? You do have a very high profile job within Gaelic games. There's nobody on those pitches who wouldn't know who you are.
Oh, you're wrong, actually. First of all, I'm oblivious to an awful lot of things, so part of that. But no, there are plenty of people who don't know who I am, which is great. And then the others are that they're fine. Men and women are very, very different. I'd say it might be slightly different if I were a Michael Lester, a Darren Maloney or something going, I played. Women tend to be kind. I haven't got any nonsense, if that's what you mean. And the girls and the team, I think, mostly find it hilarious. And they think I'm like the mammy on the team, which I probably am.
I want to bring you back to the 8th of November last, and you were down in Parkyqueeve for the Munster semi-final between Cork and Kerry, and the rain was biblical. You're in a kind of outdoor studio. It felt surreal watching that game on television, and not just in the way it unfolded, but everything around it felt a really surreal thing to watch. What was it like being there?
Yeah, surreal is the best word. It's definitely the best word, because everything about it was just weird. The rain was like nothing that I had experienced before at a match ever. Now, the funny thing was, I don't know about you guys, but I struggle in the cold more than anything else. It wasn't actually that cold. And I know a lot of people are saying, oh, you poor things. Jeez, we were blessed to be there. There's nowhere else I would rather have been. And to be fair, we were largely sheltered every now and then, because it was like a monsoon and there was this big swirl going the whole time. Every now and then you get this huge gust of wind and rain would come in and it would blow everything, and it would make it look worse than it was for us. But it would have been way worse for the players out in the pitch. Having said that, the Parkyqueeve surface was unbelievable. It was just how it held up, I don't know. So what was it like? It was brilliant. I mean, you knew, first of all, the match was intriguing because of the way it went. And as I was watching it, I knew Cork were doing really, really well. It never occurred to me, actually, that Kerry wouldn't win. And I was even surprised when we went to the extra time. But when Mark Keane, first of all, when Luke Connolly had that pop that went up in the sky, and you were thinking, no, what are you doing? What are you doing? And then when Mark Keane scored the goal, and I actually went back and I looked at it a few weeks ago, and the juror's commentary was just brilliant. How he responded so quickly, it was fantastic. But just being there, and I was beside Colin Cooper. He happened to be the one next to me. You just couldn't believe it. So I think surreal is the word that you picked for it, and it was definitely the one that summed it up.
Oisín, you weren't working that day in Parkyqueeve. You were up north that day, isn't that right?
I was freezing my ass off somewhere else, yeah.
Yeah, and so did you see that match live, or were you?
Yeah, no, I seen it. I was watching at home with the kids, and we had talked about it the week before on the podcast.
Who told us what was going to happen?
Exactly. And
you mocked him. You absolutely mocked him. You did everything but travel to Cork to laugh at him.
Yeah, I rubbished them, and but still, it was the start of something that was very special last year. I felt like Joanne saying about, you know, people saying about, you know, you're freezing. There's no way that I would go home to my mum or any of my family and say, listen, it was absolutely freezing today, because they would chop my head off, because we were the lucky ones, because we got to experience what was going on. I mean, you take that game, you take what happened in the final with Tipperary and Cork, and you go to Armagh, and you have Donegal and Cavan, and all of those games made the championship what it was. That's not even taken into consideration, Harland. But yeah, it was a very special year, I thought, to be involved in that. Punditry felt very important all of a sudden, very, very important. Because people didn't have the opportunity to get there, and in Ulster football, a lot of stuff goes on off the ball. It's fair enough to say, and even in other
what kind of stuff,
even in other provinces as well, just intriguing stuff that, like, especially from the say, like, there's a lot of variables. Like, we talked about this before, it seems a lot more variables in Ulster football than there is anywhere else. So the variables is one thing, and then how to negate an opponent. There's lots of different ways in order to do that, and also seems to be a couple more on top of that. So I suppose, as I say, punditry felt more important than ever, that you're able to give people a little bit more of an insight and the normal, because people didn't have the opportunity to go and see it. It was played under completely different conditions than we would normally see it, and actually in a lot of time in different grounds than we were used to seeing it as well. Like an Ulster final in the Athletic grounds in Armagh, like, and whether that really and truly wasn't conducive to great football. But I think that's what made last year so special. And I think people seeing it at the time, I looked at it and I said, look, this is a one-off. Let's try and make the most of it. It turns out we'll get another crack at it, even though a little bit earlier in the year. But yeah, it seemed like a very special year to be involved in TV stuff and radio stuff.
You two worked together on the broadcast of the All-Ireland football final in Christmas week, a sentence which seems quite remarkable to say it. What was that like? What was it like to be in Croke Park that day?
Brilliant. Go on, Oisin.
It was brilliant, and you know what? I've gone back over that game a couple of times now, and there's a couple of reasons for it. Because Joanne asked me a question at half time of the All Ireland final, and I answered it, and I got a bit of mates and family members and that were questioning what I said. But Joanne asked me, what would you do with the sweeper, or what would you do with the extra man? And I said, it has to be a deep sweeper. There has to be some scar tissue from what Mayo what went on with Mayo the previous year. You can see the 2-8 and whatever, 10, 12 minutes or whatever it was. And I thought, you know, they'll have to protect against that happening again. And that's not what they did. So you look stupid sort of way. But that tells you a lot about Mayo. And look, I have a lot of things to say about Mayo this year, that on looking back on last year, simple things like they used 38 players last year. They were relegated in the league. But they took that in the chin, went into the championship, weren't that far off causing an upset in the final that day. And this, at times, they looked as if they had Dublin all wrapped up. But look, we're not naive enough to think that Dublin were ever going to let that play out the way it played out. But there's a couple of decisions and a couple of incidents in that game which made a real massive difference. And we didn't have much time after the game to talk about them, but like when it comes to Mayo, I still think they'll deserve a huge amount of credit for what's happening down there, and the fact that it doesn't matter. They're going to keep trying to unearth another couple of gems, and it's not going to take probably that many more to have them back up there again. And look, we can keep saying, oh, that'll be the end of Mayo, that'll be the end of Mayo. There's no such thing. They're just one of those teams that's going to keep coming.
How did you find it, Joanne?
Yeah, I did. It was just, we're back to the whole season was surreal. So you can take that as already. But you just felt, it was one of these things where you felt like you were part of something special, and you were so aware the whole time that you were lucky. And everybody there seemed to, no matter who they were, whether they were working on cameras or the keepers, everybody knew that they were so, so blessed to be there, and that they were part of something different, something historical, something special. And it did, like I know what Oisin was saying earlier about it seemed more important. It more felt like there was more pressure on you, because these are things that are going to be remembered. Please God, they won't be repeated in the same way because of the reason. But there were times where you were aware these are times and broadcasts that are going to be talked about quite possibly for a very, very long time. So yeah, I know people keep saying, oh, we're privileged, but it's the only real word you could use. That's what it felt like being there. It was something different. It was an All-Ireland final, what was it, 6 days before Christmas Day. That's insanity. Like when you actually think about it, whoever would have thought that would happen? So that was it. Yeah, just lucky and part of something special.
It was an intense time, Paul, because there was a lot of games coming thick and fast, and didn't feel as if there was much of a breather between us. It went from, you know, reviewing the game to previewing almost straight away. There was no time for, you know, dissecting games majorly before you had to move on to the next one. And it was very, very intense. And like, I don't know about Joanne, but when I come home after the All-Ireland final, I sat down and went, you know, yeah. Like it was just a period of time you just put your head down and you realize that, you know, it was going to be a tough number of weeks or whatever it was, and that everybody, like, you know, like Joanne and myself and anybody else who's involved, everybody's got lives outside of that, and families and work or whatever it is, and it was just seeing, it was just a really intense period.
It was emotional, wasn't it? It was emotional. Yeah. Even when you think of, you had the Bloody Sunday commemorations, which were done brilliantly, and I'm normally one, I find these things boring, and I don't mind saying I normally did. Didn't find that in the least bit. That I was just, you just felt, it was kind of eerie. And then, of course, it was wrapped up in that weekend where insane things happened, and the emotion coming from the pitch, the emotion that you could feel just in the air the whole time. It was, it's really hard to describe, actually.
When you've talked there, both of you have talked about the time that you have to talk about games. And Oisin, you mentioned after the game, but even at halftime, the television is, it's so, because of advertisements either side of it, you've got a very condensed period of time in which you can probably discuss three moments, three events in a half, not really much more than that. How do you pick them? Who picks them?
Well, I'll say it's team, but ultimately from listening to the lads, I will, between me and the lad and maybe the program editor, but we'll have a chat, and just judging from what they say and what we think, ultimately, I suppose you could say I'm probably the one who does do it, but it's all based on what everybody else has been saying and everybody thinks is important. And I say, right, we'll do this, this, and this. I mean, if Oisin feels really strongly about it, he'll turn around and say, well, personally, I think this is higher, and we'll have a discussion about it, and then we'll switch it. But I suppose probably me, but with an awful lot of talk. And
there's some things that just can't be left out. There's some things that are so clear that just can't really be left out. And honestly, I'll tell you this straight up. Some days you're fishing for stuff, looking for stuff. And other days you're going, how are we going to condense this into, you know, what we have? So it varies dramatically, but there's some days that there's just certain things that can't be left out. And there's big moments in the game that just can't be left out. And then otherwise, then I suppose, as Joanne says, it's a bit of a team effort, with Joanne having the final say.
But it also, it is, it's funny you should pick that, ask about that, because it's probably the greatest skill of broadcasting is trying to fit in what you want to say and what you want to discuss within the tiniest period of time, and having to be ruthless and say, yes, that's important, but if we want to talk about this properly, that's just not going to happen. So, you know, you have to prioritize where you're going, and you might decide one thing and the lads might start talking so well about something else and it becomes something bigger that you on the spot have to decide, right, that other yoke is gone, let's stick with this. So yeah, that's the way
it's different than the evening show or any evening show, like live, the live at halftime and what you choose to pair. It's an unfolding story. It's unwritten what's going to happen. Have you come out after a game and thought, oh, we're after missing something absolutely fundamental here in the first half? Have you come out afterwards and thought, okay, we've missed a trick here?
Yeah. Regularly you come up. Well, I'd never be perfectly happy with everything. I'd always feel there's stuff we could have done more and we could have done better. But there are occasions where you go, don't put me in the spot when they ask me for one. But there are times when I go, do you know what? I think we should have done that. Or maybe we stayed too long in this and we could have got in that. Or we might decide that if we have time, we'll stick in this incident, we'll talk about it. And then last minute we say, no, we won't, because the teams might come out. And then the teams end up staying longer in there and you're talking about another thing instead. And you're thinking, oh, we could have got that in. So yeah, always questioning and never feel like we've quite managed to get there.
Oh, a nuance in the rule. For example, Cavan v Down last year in the championship, Conor Madden stepped off the field, stepped back on, was involved in the goal. I can't remember what I said after, but I basically was saying that, you know, it was fine, and all of a sudden three referees, you know, he stepped off the pitch, which is something I wasn't even looking at, to be honest. I was just looking at what at the incident and was there a foul involved. So little nuances in the rules that maybe you miss out on. I find them particularly annoying because I hate referees getting one over me.
You're doing that on the spot. You were co-com that day. I'm a terror for if there's something like that and it's up in the air, I'm on the phone and I'm ringing and I won't say who, But he's probably going, oh God, here she is again. So I'm phone saying, what is the exact rule? And I won't ask them. They know what I'm asking about. But I'll say, what's the rule in relation to if a player does X, Y, or Z? And they say, that's not what he did. Because they know what. But yeah, no, I'll be, the phone is out, trying to get everything exact. Because I'll want the exact, you need to know what the exact rule is. Because you can turn around and say one thing. And actually what the rule book says is not what most people think it says. That happens quite often. You'd be amazed how often the rule book says something different to what you all your life has believed to be the rule, and most people around you do as well.
And it gets tweaked, Paul, that gets tweaked more than you would believe. And there's another tweak in this time around. I just got the rules the other day, and there's a tweak around an offence in the penalty area or the parallelogram that that you can get sent off for, but it actually doesn't give away a penalty. I get the right wording for it, but again, that's something that has changed from last year, but it was something that was brought to my attention. Doesn't make any sense whatsoever, but hey, we stopped making sense of it quite a while ago, but yeah, it's just another little thing just to keep an eye on.
Where did you get the book from? I haven't got it yet.
Well, I have contacts. Do you want to
we won't examine that statement.
A referee, basically. I'll send it on to you.
When you're running a discussion on the Sunday game, let's turn to after the match. When you're running a discussion on the Sunday game, what are you looking to give the viewer?
I have policies that I think are most important, and my number one thing is accuracy, followed by fairness. And I think if you get accuracy, fairness automatically comes. So I want the most accurate description and analysis of the game and of everything that's going on that we can possibly get. And if you are, everything is as accurate as you can be, then ultimately you are fair on everybody involved. And you have to add, that is particularly important when you are dealing with an amateur sport. But I still think it should be the same, even if they're professionals, but it's particularly important when you're talking about amateurs as well. So ultimately, accuracy and fairness, you can't beat that. After that, obviously, entertainment comes into it and all that, and proper analysis. But the most important thing is just to get things right.
If we talk about analysis and research for a second, the people who work with you behind the scenes in RTE and people who work with you in punditry will all say to a person how much time you spend on analysis and on research, and that every single person who've spoken to talks about your understanding of football and how well you know the game. But do you find it frustrating when you're essentially chairing a discussion and trying to mold a discussion? Would you like to actually get in and offer your own opinion more?
No, definitely not. I actually wouldn't. For a start, one of the reasons being is that nobody cares about my opinion. It doesn't matter if somebody, that, by the way, that's the first time I've ever heard that, and it's very nice, thanks. But it really doesn't matter if Oisin thinks that or if somebody else thinks that. That makes no difference, because the person sitting at home couldn't care less, because I'm not there as the pundit, and that's not my job. My job is to get the best discussion going, and to give as many of the sides, the good sides, the important sides of the discussion going. So, no, it doesn't bother me in the least. What I love to do is, because everybody thinks differently, and I love hearing that, and I love getting the different views, and people can see the same thing and think something different of it, and that's what I love. And I love being able to get that from people and chat to people about that and hear. I don't need to do that, because I'm so lucky with the job that I have, and that I'm able to just dissect what other people think and get their views of it. And I'm like a hoover, trying to hoover up as much as I can from all the different minds out there who see it differently.
That's fair enough, but I do want to ask you a couple of questions though about your opinions on football. So who do you think is the best footballer you've seen play?
Ooh. Don't embarrass me, Joanne.
Well, I won't.
You said Peter Canavan, Oisin, didn't you?
Did you really?
Well, it took me about 10 years before I actually said it, but yeah, I did eventually. So
I would prefer to use the word favorite instead of best, because I think there are so many different things. I was always, if we're going back,
that's a very neat sidestep. Very nicely.
No, but I do mean it, because I genuinely mean that. I loved Trevor Giles. Always adored Trevor Giles as a footballer. You see where I go with these. I'm a very particular type of footballer. I love a playmaker. So I loved Trevor Giles. And even though we only really got to see him for one season, I adored watching Marty Clark play. That year, 2010, when he just pulled the strings for Down, one of my favourite years of football, simply because of the way he played. There was a player for Dublin called Christina McGinty, who used to be the Dublin captain, and she would have been my idol growing up, basically. So I would have loved her. And again, really smart footballer. I love a smart footballer and someone who pulls the strings. So,
yeah, I have a good friend from Dublin, one of my oldest friends in the city. Here's a guy who he's the absolute spit of Trevor Giles. So when we were hanging around together in the late 90s and early 2000s, we'd be walking somewhere and people shouting, "How are you, Trevor?" at him. It was, throwing things at him. You had to go around undercover.
Well, one of my favorite moments was we were in New York, but 2017, and we were playing, like, they brought 30 ex-All-Stars over for a match. I think they still regret it to this day, but anyway, they took us over. And Graham Garrity, I was walking just into the club rooms with Graham Garrity, and about five or six people said, "How are you, Trevor?" And it was one of the greatest moments of my life, I swear to God. You talk about a gay, I've never seen him as angry. Not even when the Aussies were at him, was he as angry as what he was. He was so deflated walking in. And I've called him Trevor since.
Yeah. Did you get them up to it?
I wish I had the brains to do that.
Brilliant.
How do you feel about pundits from the counties who are playing being on screen with you?
Yeah, I know a lot of people have issues with this. I don't, as long as you have one. I also don't mind if they're biased, because of course they're biased. They're supposed to be giving you that sort of view from the camp. So as long as you have both camps represented and hopefully a neutral in there, it actually doesn't bother me. In fact, it can add, if they do it properly and they give you the sort of the Kerry view or the Dublin view or whatever it is, I think it just gives you a different form of punditry. But if you're sitting there expecting them to be neutral, well, that's just not going to happen. So if you're looking for neutral punditry, no. But if you're looking for to get different views, well, then I'm perfectly okay with it.
Do you look at other presenters on other stations and in other sports in other countries, whatever, do you look at them and how they do their job?
I probably do without even realizing it. I suppose I do, but not in a sort of sit down and say, I'm going to see how he or she does it. But if somebody asks a good question or something that I wouldn't have thought of, I'll always take note of it and think of the way they do it and would I have asked that. It's more that rather than kind of study them as such, because I think one of the real key parts to being a broadcaster at all is being yourself. I think that's the, if you attempt to imitate anybody, you're onto a loser. You just can't do that. So to a degree, yes, but mostly no, if that makes sense.
I had a conversation with Joe Malloy from Off the Ball and Dave McIntyre, commentator, recently, and it was in the context of words that were used. He clearly was upset after we used it. The golfer Justin, Justin Thomas, what he said afterwards, and we were just talking about this idea of saying something on air, saying something on live on air, and this fear that one sentence can just basically ruin you. Do you have that fear?
No, not like that. What I will say, what Justin Thomas said was that the word he used was particularly would put him in a bad place. So I can understand.
Yeah.
Although I do understand, you know, you would question why that word would even come into his head. But of course, he was after missing a putt that he should have put in. But even still, so I actually can understand why he came in for criticism, even though you can have sympathy at the same time for him. But
yeah, that's where I'd be on it too.
Yeah, but Not while I'm on air, because when you're on air, you're in the thick of it and it doesn't even come into your head. But there are times you think, I suppose it is possible that you could say something, and especially me, because I'm terrible. If something comes into my head, why wouldn't you say it? I remember my sister saying one time, you know, just because you think it, you don't actually have to. but not when I'm on air, and I wouldn't, that's one of the few things I wouldn't overthink. But it is obviously possible.
Oisín?
I've never ever thought of it that until you said it right there now. And now it's going to be in my head from now on whenever I want to do anything around punditry. But I think just like sort of what Joanne said earlier about trying to be yourself as much as you can and not trying to imitate anybody else or not trying to just have a genuine opinion on what you think. And like, it doesn't have to, you don't have to disagree or agree with the person you're beside. You just have to be forthright in what your opinion is and believe in that opinion. I remember on radio one day saying something and Joanne picked up on it because it was a bit half-arsed. I can't remember exactly what it was.
I'm actually a bit shocked at that.
But it was half-arsed, right? And Joanne said to me, and to be honest, I've been used to not to being challenged on saying on what you say, and made me think just a little bit more about how I put things across and if I'm going to make a point to be forthright about it. Now, luckily enough for me, it was something that I felt very strongly about, but obviously I felt as if I had to develop that point and to make sure people had an understanding of where I was coming from. But I suppose that's the biggest thing for me. The biggest thing is to be forthright with my opinions, and the important thing is that your opinions are your own, because if they're not coming from there, then that's when you will be called out or you will be found wanting.
Do you ever go away and think, do you know what, I was actually totally wrong there on that? And I don't mean about a prediction, or I don't mean about trying to forecast something. I mean actually just an opinion that you just go away and you think about it more. You're asked something in the spur of the moment, or you offer an opinion in good faith, and then you walk away from it and you just go, oh, I was actually wrong there.
I would definitely change my mind on things, but I've never thought, you know, afterwards that I was wrong in saying what I said. But I would look back and things and think, like, for example, just that example I gave earlier after the All-Ireland final, like, you know, why wouldn't Mayo? Like, Mayo are known for going after Dublin, they're known for going after games, for attacking games, for pushing up and all that sort of thing. And yet there I was saying that they should sit back. But that was just the way I felt at the time, because I thought, you know, there's bound to be, as I say, some scarring from what had gone on 12 months previously. So that's just an example. You sort of change your mind around it, but at the same time, you know, usually when you're, it's like a manager thinking about making a switch. You make a switch in good faith, and sometimes it'll work, and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you're a genius, and sometimes you're not. So sort of look at it like that.
Joanne, you said earlier that with about 5 minutes left in the Kerry Cork match from the Munster final, that it just dawned on you that Cork might actually win this match. I have to say, I watched all of that match, and I'm not too sure it dawned on me that Cork were actually going to win it or actually could win it. I just presumed Kerry would tip on a couple of scores. Even if the ball was dropping into the square, I think it's at that point that it finally struck me that actually Cork might just win this match, and Mark Keane scored. Did you get a sense, did either of you get a sense watching the All-Ireland final that you would reach that point with Mayo? Did you actually, did either of you ever think Mayo were going to win that match?
No, I didn't. I'm still trying to come to terms with the fact that Oisín is kind of second guessing himself after what he said at halftime. I think still to this day, I think it makes sense, the idea of putting a sweeper back there just for those first few minutes, even if it does go against the James Horan policy. But no, I confess, I never did. Even when they looked really, really good, it never felt to me like they were going to pull away at any stage.
Oisin.
Yeah, no, I was always doubtful about it. And that's the way, that's Dublin. Like when I talk about Mayo being scarred, I'm scarred. Dublin have scarred me over the last 6 years. That you just feel as if they'll always find a way. And you know what? One of the biggest things, Paul, I just noticed from even from last year, and probably even going back 2 years now, they're not getting what they got scores wise off the bench, but they're still finding a way to do it. And the guys who are coming on are in different positions, and the guys who are coming on aren't necessarily making an impact around in the forward line, but they are making an impact as far as primary possession and all, shutting somebody down, all that sort of thing. So I never really was convinced that Mayo was going to win.
Isn't that really interesting from a broadcasting point of view? Because if you were broadcasting a Leinster football semi-final or final, and you feel that Dublin are going to win, and the chances are, and the evidence is really clear, it's a 16, 17, 18, 19 point average winning margin across the last number of years. How do you convey a sense of excitement about a game or a sense of interest about the game when you know all the evidence is stacked in a different direction?
Well, I think this comes back to what I was saying about accuracy and fairness earlier on. Like, it's not our job to pretend that something that's not exciting is exciting. And people sitting at home, I think there's few things they hate more than people pretending they've just watched something that means something that it doesn't. So that doesn't even come into it. What you do then is you look for what the story actually is out of the game. So obviously, there's only so many times you can talk about Dublin's dominance and the issues with Dublin and all that sort of thing. So what you have to do is find out what is there outside of the fact that Dublin have hammered a team in Leinster once again. And depending on the match and depending on what's happened, that's going to be something different. But I would hope I would never pretend something is exciting when it definitely hasn't been.
You said excitement there, and excited. Are you guys excited by the National Football League side, by the Allianz League starting? Are you excited by that idea?
Excited by anything starting again. I think everybody is. I think we're all, I would imagine everybody's excited to see what teams are at. Obviously, it's been 5 months since they had any sort of a match, because obviously they haven't had challenge matches at all. And there are, if you look even back to last year, there's certain things I'm excited about. I'm excited about seeing what Galway have. We've been talking about Mayo plenty, but we forget that Galway were beaten by 1 point by Mayo. I think people forget that. And if Owen McLaughlin hadn't dragged down Sean Kelly in the last minute, Galway could have been Connacht champions, despite not having played particularly well. And that was their only championship match that they had, because obviously Sligo couldn't play. And judging anybody on last year, I think, is, apart from the teams perhaps that progressed several matches in, you can't. With what happened with COVID, you just can't judge them. So if you just even think back and don't dismiss this time last year in the league when Galway, the type of football they were playing and how they were flying it. The idea that Pádraig Joyce would bin that and think, okay, we have to change approach, seems highly unlikely given his personality. So I'm really excited to see what they bring. Obviously, Tyrone with their new management team, and Conor McKenna. We're going to see a full season of Conor McKenna. And he, in what, a couple of games, just, I can't get over the impact he made immediately. So we're going to hopefully see a full season of him, at least a full, well, kind of full half league of him, and then whatever they manage to do in the championship. And excited to see what Kerry have as well. And if they're going to continue, they obviously decided that they had to do something, change the way they play if they're going to really, really progress. And obviously it didn't work out against Cork. So are they going to continue to do something like that? Are they going to go more defensive? And I know you guys were talking the last podcast about, obviously, they've lost Peter Crowley now as well, so they're even struggling in terms of the numbers of defenders they have. But are they going to persist with the type of game plan that they were building towards, even though things went wrong against Cork? So there's loads of stuff to look ahead to. So yes, very excited.
Oisin?
Yeah, the Galway one is an interesting one. Let's say if you give Pádraig Joyce the opportunity now, he would opt to have no more games in Pearse Park. It just doesn't seem to be conducive to the way they play football for some reason. Like even like even Tuam, like, which again you would think, you know, for a goalie team, top of the ground sort of type team, you would think, you know, that's not a place for me. But it seemed to actually play better there, and then away from home. So I think they are a very interesting conundrum this year, and depending on just how much work they've been able to get in between now and then, I think I feel a little bit for the four teams in Division One from Ulster, because they're probably sick of the sight of each other at this stage, and like the people are talking about a mini Ulster Championship, and it's probably going to come down to nobody knows what sort of bounce Tyrone's going to get, but it probably comes down to Monaghan and Armagh in a dogfight to try and stay in that division. So as much as I'm like Joanne, I'm very excited about the fact that, you know, we're getting football back. I would have loved to have seen, you know, Armagh play, not Dublin, a Kerry, and and a Galway and teams like that, because I think that's what they would need. And I think when you take into account the Ulster Championship, and we continue talking about how close it is, and how it's, you know, as far as provincial championships go, it's the best of them. It's the best of a bad lot, I suppose. But when I think about the quality of it that has come out over the last couple of years, that's in question again, I think. And it depends now how Donegal will progress. Like, I'm not going to start in Donegal again because it'd be unfair of me, but the squad that they have, the players they've brought through, they're not making the most of them players, and this is a massive year for them. Massive, massive year for not only from league football, Paul, but can they get out of that side of the draw in Ulster, because they have to be hurting big time for what has happened in the last 3 years. Again, I'm going over old ground now, but just Galway, Donegal, and then what sort of bounce Tyrone will get. And you know what? Monaghan probably good bit of bad press maybe last year. Banty, you know, got a hell of a lot of stick about, you know, how the house of cards come down against Cavan, but they still have a lot of good players. They still have a very good underage system, and they've breathed a good bit of new blood into that squad, and so there's, like, I'm after naming, you know, four teams, three of them from Ulster, and you know what I mean, like, it's a bit cutthroat up here because only obviously one of them can go ahead and progress, but I'd just be worried about the quality. Do you know what I mean? Like, it will be a tight, tense Ulster Championship, same way as it always is, but just the quality whenever we actually get out of Ulster. Can we realistically put up a challenge at this stage? And Donegal are best place as far as players are concerned, but mindset at this stage, I'm just not sure where they're at.
Yeah, for people who haven't followed it, the structure of the league this year is there are four divisions again, eight teams in the first three divisions, seven in the third, because London are not involved, and of course Kilkenny don't field a football team in the league. In Division One, across all the divisions, there's a north section and a south section, and it's Division One sees Tyrone, Donegal, Monaghan and Armagh playing off against each other, and Kerry, Galway, Roscommon and Dublin on the other side. But it actually means that both Monaghan and Armagh, if they finish bottom of that section, could be relegated, because they go and play the bottom two teams in the other section, or whoever finishes bottom there. You lose those two games and you're done. And it is quite tight in that. Mayo in Division Two. Do you think that actually going to Division Two might help Mayo?
Well, I take that. I don't think they care, actually. Because Mayo just doesn't seem to make any difference. And Division 2 has been strong, obviously, the last few years as well. But it seems to matter not a jot at Mayo in the league. Sometimes they're absolutely atrocious in the league and they just sneak in at the end. So I honestly think it doesn't make a blind bit of difference.
For them. I want to skip to Division 4. Oisin, you've been waiting for this. I know you've friends and acquaintances taking teams around Division 4. Talk us through Division 4. First day out, Louth v Antrim. Let's just start with Louth v Antrim.
I think I might be going over all the ground, but I was taking a lot of those Louth lads. I've been coaching DKT for 10 years now, and any time I've ever mentioned Louth, any of those Louth players, they've never seen that fuss on whether they played for Louth or not. Puzzle, I guess I had none of them ringing me asking me why they weren't making the Louth panel, and I had a lot of phone calls this year wondering why, you know, they weren't getting shout and all those sort of things. So that tells me one thing, that he has the best players available to him. They're all in there, and
that's pretty hard.
Yeah, and there's definitely a renewed hope around. I think there's an obvious ceiling for the likes of Louth, but I think, you know, from the players that they have, the personnel that they have, they really should be getting out of Division 4, to be honest. I just think, like, when you look at Louth and you look at Antrim, they're trying. They're definitely trying to do the right things. They're putting the money where their mouth is as far as structures and all those things. And it's not just the structures at the top. You know, this thing of, let's bring in a high-profile manager and we'll... Like, you know, there's a real, they've got a direction there and they're going to follow that. And on top of that, they've brought in high-profile managers. Now, if that was a standalone thing, then I'd be really worried about it. But it's not a standalone thing. There's been a review of football in both Louth and Antrim. And there'll be a hell of a lot of work gone in there. I think Sligo's another interesting one. I think Tony Mack. He again, I don't think he has all of the players he wants to have, but I think he has the majority of them. And I think what you're going to see, that when people watch Sligo, I think you'll see a different approach than we've seen from Sligo in some time. And maybe an approach that we haven't seen from that many teams as far as how direct they'll be. I hope I'm not giving away too much, but how direct they'll be. And so I think for me, that makes Division 4 alone, just even because of those three teams, really, really intriguing. But, like, you know, you skip past Offaly. I mean, like, realistically, Offaly are the next Dublin / Limerick with all the money they have now. So
that's actually outrageous. That is an absolutely outrageous slur.
What's outrageous about it? Have he's not got a pile of money now?
I mean, I'm not too sure where to start with this. Shane Lowry, for those of you who don't know, has come on board as a sponsor's patron of Offaly GAA. He is, I think the money that he has given is important in helping grassroots, etc. But it's more than that as well. It's his bringing his financial and commercial acumen to what's happening in terms of the raising of funds for investment in the underage game. And it's what you said with about Louth and Antrim. It's the fact that the money is being directed towards coaching structures and towards the building of nurseries across 41 clubs and all that really matters. And, you know, this kind of this snide kind of Armagh tone that was delivered in, it's unbecoming.
Whenever you get down off that hay horse, will have some sort of effect at the top of Offaly football / hurling?
I think there's a longer term project here for Offaly football. I think there are a lot of players coming through at under 15 and under 17 now, but I think it's going to take time. I do think it's going to take time.
But you now have the financial clout to go in the right direction. Is that
I'm astonished that you would go down this road.
Why would you be astonished? Although I did laugh when Shane Lowry was keen to point out that he didn't have the same sort of cash to be pumping into
JP McManus. Yeah, I suppose if that's the bar you're setting it really high.
All the Offaly boys now, every tour gig he plays in now, all the majors won't be interested in the lowly stuff, not the European tour.
It'll be
all the PGA stuff where it's $2 million for the winner and all that.
But that's where the way we kind of roll like that as a county. Anyway, Division 3, you're right, we did skip past Division 3, and Tipperary are in Division 3 and Cavan are in Division 3. So, Joanne, two provincial champions in Division 3. Were you in Thurles for the Tipperary match? Were you?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
oh, that was just, I mentioned emotion earlier. It was on because you were there, and then you had it followed by the Ulster one was after the same day. It was just on the whole weekend, just incredible. And it just felt like it all culminated in this ball of pure emotion that was down on the field. And I know it was awful that there were no fans there, but you could still, you could actually just feel this sense of history or something that was there, and it was coming off everything, and it was just was unbelievable. And then I think, yeah, Colin O'Riordan's interview was obviously,
yeah, a very emotional one.
It was emotional, but then I thought the Conor Sweeney interview in many ways told you more, because now I'd be a massive fan of his as a footballer. I just think he was often overlooked as the type of footballer he is. But did you see how calm and almost this kind of subtle steeliness in his interview? You could see where the performance came from, despite
they expected to win, didn't they? They expected to win.
Yeah, well, it certainly wasn't a doubt, and it certainly, he was even playing down the jerseys thing, and he was, and not in a sort of media managed way. It was all very, very genuine and articulate, even though he just played in that, in those jerseys, in this occasion, had achieved that, and he was still able to stand there and give this perfect interview where he analysed everything and he answered everything so well. It was an incredible day. But again, like, you think of their performance against Limerick, and you forget that if he hadn't pulled off this ridiculous, like, it's a
unbelievable kick, unbelievable.
Side is a point down, and there were 20, because I dug it out just to check earlier on today, there were 20 seconds on the clock of injury time. So they did have time for him to take the free and give it off and get it back and play it in. But he chose. If he'd missed it, it's game over, the championship over. But they're so difficult to assess what they're like. You would imagine.
And he's gone back to Australia, of course. So there's a player. Colin O'Riordan has gone back to Australia.
Yeah,
so
yeah. And do we know if Michael Quinlivan, I presume, is still hanging about, which would be something, because obviously he wasn't due to be there last year. But even like during the league, sure, they were lucky to hang on in Division 3 last year. They were lucky to get past Limerick in the championship. So I'd imagine we'd probably see more inconsistency from them again this league, and they'd probably be hanging on, would be my guess. I'd say Cavan would be very eager to get back up. That would be my thoughts on that. So I'd say we might see a bit more consistency from Cavan, but I have no idea what we'll see from Tip.
Oisín.
Yeah, Cavan for me should go back up. Be interesting to see if they have a couple of boys who also went travelling last year, and actually I believe they're still away, but I don't know for that for definite. But McVitie has been their best player for 3 or 4 years. Be interesting to see if what he's seen last year is enough to entice him back. If he did, that would be a massive thing for them. I think a tuned in Conor Madden, fit, ready to go, would be a massive player for them. And I think would be well fit to operate in Division 3 and could do a lot of damage and a lot of heavy scoring in Division 3. But Cavan last year, I watched him against Armagh last year, and they were horrendous. And I thought to myself, I don't know if these guys are going to pick up any points. I can't remember what the big change was, but they went to Laois. I'm not sure what the game straight after Armagh was, but they went to Laois in the third game and beat Laois down there and started to sit up and take notice of them then. And I like the two. I like Smith as a wing back. I think one of the players of the Ulster Championship last year. Again, maybe didn't just get as much of the limelight as some of the guys. But I just think that Mickey Graham's a very shrewd manager. They're very well set up. And I think they'll come out of Division 3. And like Johan with Tipperary, I haven't a clue. What Tipperary are going to have to offer this year. But if they have any designs on going any further, like, you think that they would, like, all every team needs to hit the ground running. That's the thing. You know what I mean? They all need to, and they've only had 4 weeks proper preparation.
Most of them.
And you would think that, I suppose at this stage, that that would be important to Dave Power and them boys to get out of that division. Mm. You know what I mean? Just to play at that little bit of a higher level. And I think Mayo will just bounce back straight up into Division 1. I know you didn't ask me about that, but I think they'll step back up into Division 1.
Can Cork continue getting out of Division 2? They've gone from 3-2 last year. Can they go from 2-1?
I think they can. I think it's going to be really tough. Like last year, Division 2 and Division 3, actually, really, really tight. Cork are certainly capable of it. I mean, you can't just put it all down to a poor Kerry day and the bad weather. They obviously have something there, and they have a very determined manager, as we saw, eager to get them back in action very early. They have good players, and they have a good management team. I think they're capable of it. It's really, really tight. I'm dying to see what Meath have to offer as well, because obviously they had some very good days last year and then they had an absolutely horrendous day, but they wouldn't be the only ones who've suffered that sort of fate against Dublin. So I think Division 2 is again going to be really, really close.
So let's go through it really quickly. We'll call this out. Who's going to win the league? Just give me a name.
Oh, who's going to win? Kerry.
Kerry.
Dublin.
Okay. And who'll be relegated?
Roscommon and Monaghan.
Roscommon.
I'm going to go Monaghan or Ma. Sorry.
Yeah. I think it'll be Roscommon and Armagh. Mayo, who'll win Division 2, or which two will go up in Division 2? It's Mayo, Down, Meath, Westmead, Cork, Kildare, Clare and Laois.
I'll go Mayo, Cork. I'll see Cork edge out Meath.
I'll go Mayo, Meath.
Yeah, I think I'll go Mayo, Cork as well. And who'll be relegated?
Call them out again for me, sorry.
Meath, Westmead, Clare, Laois, Cork, Kildare, Mayo and Down.
Clare and Down for me.
Clare and Down.
I'll go yeah. Clare.
You go what, sorry, Joanne?
Kildare, Laois.
Kildare and Laois. Okay, wow. Division 3, Longford, Derry, Fermanagh, Cavan, Limerick, Tip, Offaly and Wicklow. Who's going up and who's going down? You were saying Cavan and Tip earlier. You stick with Cavan and Tip?
I probably will go Cavan Tip, yeah.
I'll go Cavan and Offaly.
Yeah, I'll go Cavan and Offaly actually as well. Division 2. Louth, Antrim, Sligo, Leitrim, Waterford, Carlow and Wexford.
I'll go Louth, Sligo.
Yeah. Joanne?
Louth, Sligo, but I'm interested in the fact that Enda McGinley took over Antrim and he's very, very ambitious. Like, Enda doesn't do things if he doesn't think he's going to win. So I'll go Louth, Sligo, but it wouldn't surprise me if Antrim got in there.
Yeah, I'm going to go Antrim. I think Antrim will win that division, and I think it'll be Louth with them. We didn't do relegation from Division 3, so it's Longford, Derry, Fermanagh, Cavan, Limerick, Tipperary, Offaly and Wicklow. I keep a score on these, by the way, Joanne, for the year.
Oh, God. I'll go Longford, Wicklow.
I'll go Longford, Limerick.
Longford, Limerick, yeah. I think Limerick aren't too bad. We're...
Yeah, it's me, though.
Yeah.
You can learn a few things off Joanne.
And just before, don't forget that we have this new black card rule that is coming in as well that could cause absolute mayhem, especially after I was listening to Fergal Horgan on the, I don't know if you heard him, the All-Ireland final, talking on the hurling last week. It's definitely going to cause mayhem in hurling because they've decided to bring in the black card but not bring in the black card, which is absolutely hilarious. So
but you wouldn't want to encourage clarity. It gets much more interesting for referees when you live in a kind of a grey area and you know, nobody's really too sure what happened. It creates a little bit of space for controversy.
Yeah, well, he was very clear. He was very clear on exactly what the rule was. And it sounded, I remember I was listening to him, I said, oh, it's much more straightforward than I thought. And then he started saying, but remember, there's no black card, but there is a sin bin and there is a penalty. And it's for these, and it's not a clear goal scoring opportunity. And I presume this will come into football as well. People assume it's like soccer and it's a clear goal scoring opportunity. And he says it's not, it's a goal scoring opportunity. And it's also only for specific fouls. So that's why I'm dying to see that rule book, Oisin, because I thought it was any goal-scoring opportunity, but it's only a goal-scoring opportunity under what's essentially the same as the current black card rules are. So,
and it's all in the referee's interpretation.
Exactly, which he was very keen to point out as well.
So here we go.
All we need to do is throw a TMO in the mix there, and we're absolutely away with endless fun. I'd like to say thank you, Joanne, for coming on. Hopefully we'll see you again on the show later in the year. Thanks a million, Oisin. Thanks to Larry, to Raf Rocket, to Tony Lean and everyone at the Examiner for making it happen. See you all soon. Bye-bye.
And a grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Come on, Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Listen, Green.